Welcome to Axiom's Data Guru podcast, where data experts share wisdom and insights around high-value audiences and all things data. I'm your host, Scarlett Burks.
Welcome to today's Data Guru podcast. We're excited to have Kyle Holloway, head of Axiom's Global Identity Practice, and Patrick Duggan, Senior Director of Partnerships, with us today to talk about what the world's going to look like without cookies. So we'll start off. Kyle, if you'll just give us a brief snapshot of your background and what brought you to your role at Axiom.
Sure. Thanks, Scarlett. Yes. So I've been with Axiom since 1994. Took a little bit of a hiatus along the way in there for about 6 years, but have been in the industry, you know, for 25 years and have always had a focus on identity, both at the client level and then at a product level.
All right. Same thing for you, Patrick. Tell us a little bit about your background.
So I'm almost the polar opposite of Kyle. So I went to school to do sports broadcasting and ended up in the data world, just like everybody does. I actually came to Axiom about five and a half years now. And I came from the event marketing world. So I was working with consumer electronics partners focused on in-store demos and all that kind of stuff. And a couple of people at Axiom thought that they could teach that guy some data. And so here I am. I actually started on our core business side, and I moved over to our digital team about 3 years ago. Now I oversee a couple of our key marketing stack partnerships and then a larger initiative within Axiom, which is all the great work that our core brands do, tying that to the digital world and making Axiom's story succinct and sound as one from the offline to the online world.
All right, Patrick, now that I know that secret about you, I will definitely be doing a podcast with you and Jeff Wingfield to battle it out in the sports broadcasting arena.
Yeah, Patrick's definitely got the voice for radio, and I've got the face for radio, so we're good.
I was going to say I got both, but fair enough.
All right, Patrick, we'll start with you. Some say the slow death march of the third-party cookie began back in 2017 with Apple. Can you give us just a synopsis of the history that brought us to this year with Google's decision?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's been a perfect storm. And being out here in California, I like to think about it as the gold rush a little bit. My daughter's in fourth grade, and that's the big project that all fourth grade California students do is learn about the gold rush, right? And as more and more data has become available and accessible throughout this world, and as we create more and more data exponentially year over year, I think, you know, some of the key players in the market with a lot of foresight began to identify opportunities where they could really take hold and control their own universes, right? So when people say it started with Apple and Apple limiting the cookies that were available through their system, I think that that's really one of the places that it started. And I think it was a sounding bell to a lot of the large players in the space about, hey, I need to be thinking about the future and how I'm able to control this. And I think subsequently, as we've gone, we've seen different key players within the space try to figure out just how they, control what they can control as much as possible and bring as many advertisers as possible into a very specific funnel that allow them to work the way they want to work, right? We saw it with Facebook a lot, very publicly, with some of the third-party data issues that they had. And subsequently, we're now seeing it with Google, right? And so as Google removes third-party cookies, it creates a reliance within the digital ecosystem of using Google for a number of different things that I'm sure we'll talk about in detail as we go. And I think that we'll continue to see this evolution, right? So as we've seen, you know, the Lumascape is really popular to talk about. As we've seen that explode and contract and explode again over the course of the last few years, I think we've seen so many people rely on a little bit more cavalier or Wild West abilities in how they leverage or use data. And a lot of that ties to cookies, right? So there's a lot of concern about what this means in the grand ecosystem. And one of the things I think to keep in mind as well is we continue to move faster and faster, right? 10 years ago, email was a really cool, slick way to advertise and custom target to people, right? And still important, but obviously seems antiquated by comparison in just that short amount of time. And I can tell you just on the 3.5 years that I've worked on the digital team within Axiom, we've seen incredible evolutions, not only with some of the larger players with marketing stacks, et cetera, but also small companies who have figured out something really smart or have had the foresight who have very quickly become either big companies or key companies to be tucked in within the space.
All right, Colin, can you tell us, give us a brief definition of what Google's announcement in January was, and then what are the top concerns you're hearing from clients as to how that's going to impact them?
Yeah, so what Google announced was effectively that they were going to limit the access to the third-party cookie within their browser, meaning that it was no longer going to be effective or usable for brands to leverage in part of their advertising, being able to target individuals off of their own properties, right? Because that's what a third-party cookie does. It allows you to place information on a user's browser outside of your own properties, outside of the first party space. So, you know, they are limiting that. And as Patrick just saying, I mean, they weren't the first. It was already happening. You know, Mozilla and Apple were already going down that path. And so in some ways, it was like not new news, but it was a bit of a seismic event because there's such a dominance and reliance on Google within the advertising space. So it was like, you know, kind of the last shoe dropped at that moment. And there's honestly from clients, it was a general sense of a little bit of panic because suddenly it was very real. Oh my gosh, this is happening. And the fact that third-party cookies have been in existence and been heavily relied upon for 20 plus years. So they're not a new technology, and suddenly to be like, oh, they're gone potentially within 2 years was huge. And the other aspect to that was there's not an answer. Like it wasn't, hey, we're going to deprecate this. And by the way, here's the solution. It was, hey, we're going to deprecate this. And collectively, there's a lot of money in this space is we're going to have to figure it out together, right? Which may sound fun, but at the same time, it creates a lot of panic because people don't know, you know, they don't have a canned answer yet. So that was a lot of concern. And the concerns are really focused on kind of two key aspects, scale and reach. In a way, those go together, but it's about how do I know I'm going to actually be able to reach consumers at scale, meaning off of my own property out there, you know, in a broad world, without also then the aspect of kind of the boogeyman side of it is, oh, now I have to only use Google or only use one of the walled gardens because they have the scale and reach and the rest of us are kind of out in the cold. And so that was really the concern is, hey, what are we going to do about this? And how do we move forward? And the key is, you know, it's also forcing clients to really look at their vendor selection. Who are their partners? Who are they using? What are their dependencies? Because there's been a lot of, a lack of transparency in how this ecosystem functions. And so, it just kind of brought it up to the forefront for everybody.
Yeah, I think that that's one of the things that we've touched on the last few years, really, right? And as we've continued to talk about optimization and multi-touch attribution as being key things within the space and trying to break down some of the walled gardens, I know that that's been a key tenet of Axiom's message to the community over the last few years, only makes that more difficult, right? And plays counterintuitive to what brands are really looking to accomplish, right? You want to be able to share a message no matter how customized across the space and have it be consistent, right? That message may be tailored for a partner that's more focused on B2B, or you may be experiencing as your work self versus your personal self. But tying that story together is something that, you know, the leading brands and advertisers have been working on nonstop to try to figure out how to maximize. And this just throws a nice big wrench right at the forehead of doing all of that, right? So I think that we're going to have to continue to evolve and see how it plays out to make sure that the story that we've been telling, which we believe in, which we believe is the best way to reach consumers in a fair, compliant, respectable, secure, and privacy, you know, respected manner, how we continue to do that and how that evolves.
Okay, Patrick, on the more digitally focused side of things, can you speak to the fallout around media buying and optimization, as well as what you're hearing around measurement and analytics?
Yeah, so I think to Kyle's point before, right, reach is a key fear for lots of advertisers out there. And, you know, one of the things that we talked a lot about advertisers, agencies are equally as worried about this, right? Because it's a lot of what they are invested in, what they're selling to their brands. And in a lot of cases, that media buy is being owned by the agency, right? The agency is driving that purchase of media spend. And that's a concern to them as well in terms of how they've been managing it previously. So, you know, I think across the board, we're hearing concerns. We're hearing concerns from our publisher partners as well, right? So how we're currently integrated to match and reach out to our, you know, whether it's a publisher or a platform is going to be impacted by this. And so there, I think there's a lot of concerns with the marketing stacks as well, right? Because of all the integrations that they have that have relied on digital identifiers, such as cookies, and that being displaced, a lot of concerns for DMPs, for example, as well, where data sits on the shelf and you can easily access it. You know, there's a minimal latency there in terms of getting data and getting segments that you need to activate within the universe. And I think as it relates to that identifier to tie back, as we talk about measurement and optimization and kind of the full cycle that we at Axiom on the digital side like to talk about, right? Go ahead and run a campaign. Let's measure the success and let's pivot and optimize it to ensure that we continue to get better and better and more targeted. The loss of that reach and the loss of that match is a serious disruptor to that, potentially. And so I think that as we continue to evolve over the next 18 months, we continue to see what this universe is going to look like. There's definitely a concern and definitely an ask of key partners or strong supporters such as Axiom to help guide advertisers and agencies and publishers. So basically the universe across the board in terms of what our recommendations are going to be. To tie back to Axiom's core tenet, right? We at Axiom, we're lucky in the sense that a lot of the data that we build in terms of creating the view of a customer, building segments is based on PII, right? So that's a differentiator from a lot of partners within the space who are more heavily reliant on digital identifiers. So we're able to kind of stick our chest out a little bit and say, hey guys, you know, we had always bet on PII. We're continuing to bet on PII. The challenge there is how do we answer the question to Kyle's point around the reach and the impact there to help bring all of the rest of the digital ecosystem along with us in terms of what we think is going to make the most sense in this new world.
Okay, Kyle. So we know that speaking of digital identifiers and measurement, that leads us to think about LiveRamp and their role. What will happen to them? They depend on cookies. What do we see there going forward?
Yeah, so just like many other vendors in the space, I mean, they're reevaluating their strategy, right? They're looking at their own ecosystem. What are they dependent on? What are they really building off of? And you're seeing a pivot within their perspective, as Patrick's kind of alluding, of moving towards first-party data, you know, PII-based, because, you know, with Abilitek, that gives them a great starting point, but really starting to rely more heavily on that and adding to it the aspect of the, like, authenticated traffic solution, right? It's going to first-party authentication, so you're not reliant on third-party cookies, but you're doing it on a first-party basis. Tying that into their back end, which is, you know, a PII-based solution, and then adding into that to really achieve the reach in those regards is then you have to do it in a consortium model. So, you know, everybody kind of contributing to that effect. So everyone leveraging their first party relationships to collectively come together and create more of a reach. You know, interestingly enough, you know, Patrick mentioned, you know, we used to do email, right? And it's kind of antiquated, but now email is this huge identifier, which most of the ecosystem is built off of. It's a hashed email, right? Which again is effective because it is a consistent identifier that is there. The problem is though, it's also a fragmented identifier. You know, every individual has multiple emails. And so being effectively able to tie those together and know that, oh, you know, this hashed email plus this hashed email both references the same individual. You know, certainly LiveRamp through our relationship and the history of it with Abilitek, they're able to do that more effectively than many of the vendors. So, you know, we're kind of talking about LiveRamp, but any onboarder that has, you know, really depended on cookies as part of their reach mechanism is going to have to begin, you know, shifting. And strangely enough, you know, kind of hashed email is a key component to that now. So while it isn't necessarily like the delivery mechanism for a lot of advertising, though email advertising is kind of having a little bit of a resurgence, it is as a identifier within the ecosystem.
And Kyle, I would actually, and of course we haven't talked about this, so convenient to bring it up on the podcast and kind of put you on the spot. But as it relates to, I think there's been a lot of questions and conversations that I've had with advertisers. You know, one of the things that we talk about a lot is, okay, first party cookies now versus third party cookies, right? And what kind of impact that has. And I think, you know, would just be curious with your expertise in terms of how you see first party cookies already existing in the market, how you see particular advertisers already maybe using those to a great deal of success, or whether we're not seeing a lot of that. And maybe that's something that we're trying to figure out over the next 18 months to leverage or try to hit the ground running with that as much as we possibly can.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of interest in the first party cookie side. You know, there's actually large advertisers that are moving a lot of their focus to solely the first party environment, right? Looking at their own properties, especially ones that have enough scale, so they have a wide audience, they know they're getting a lot of traffic, you know, rather than kind of going out into this more opaque, less transparency environment, you know, on other people's properties. They're saying, hey, let's take advantage of what we have. We already have this traffic. We can leverage first party cookie. That's not, you know, that hasn't been deprecated. You know, that's consistent. It's available. Let's make use of it. And so even from a Axiom standpoint, in a way, we've already had the answer to this. And that's real identity, right? Because we focused on saying, hey, we build out your first party graph based on PII, both your own first party as well as adding in, you know, second party and third party PII, and then pushing that into the digital ecosystem and then tying in your first party cookies, you know, on our digital graph side. So in many ways, we're well positioned to offer a solution to our clients that already kind of solve for this issue, because we're not anywhere in that you know, environment dependent on a third party cookie, and helping clients actually not just recognize people, but get to monetize their ability to recognize people on their own properties.
So here's a question for both of you, I guess. When the dust settles on all of this, who are the winners? Google, presumably, but who else is set to see some positive impact from this?
Yeah, and I think that that's an interesting question, because I think that there is a lot to play out. You know, I think it's easy to forget, to Kyle's point earlier, just how old the cookie is, right? So as we talk about technology, right, a lot of this is really based on technology that, you know, considering how fast the world moves today, is really been out there for a long, long time. One of the things in my conversations that I've heard with clients is more the discovery around, you know, they don't realize how old the cookie is, and they don't realize how old some of these identifiers that have been in the space for a long, long time and have just become more and more relied on exist in the space. So I think what I hope happens is that we continue to build a fluidity into our plan and minimize the reliance, right? So whoever can come up with a fluidity that allows for a pivot and allows for a system to be flexible, I think will be advantageous. And there may be some unintended benefit in the removing of this older technology to see where we go and what we discover. I think one of the other things is, if you're a consumer, inherently, I think part of the goal of this, or part of the stated goal is maybe what I should say, right, is a benefit to your customer privacy. So it's helping to minimize who can access where you've been or where you're going. And I think that as we continue to see legislation, particularly here in the US, you know, I live in California, so we're already living in the new world. And I know that we'll just see more states come, federal maybe eventually comes. I think we'll continue to see that as well. And Kyle, you may be better at touch on this than I, but certainly there's a standardization that's kind of occurring within the space as well, right? Where we've seen Safari previously do this, and we've seen Mozilla previously do this. And while Chrome is the dominant player within the space, it's more of a standardization across the board there. So I think that there are definitely some positives, and certainly there's some negatives within the space as well, whether we're talking about a duopoly or whether we're talking about access to content. But I think that we may see some unintended benefits out there as people have to rediscover what this new world looks like.
Yeah, I think you've got a great point there. And it is that aspect that there's been such a reliance on something, and then for that to be changed, it is forcing innovation. It is forcing a lot of collaboration as well, because, it did kind of accentuate that duopoly. And so, there is, some resistance to it, or just some, honestly, probably some jealousy to it that they have such a stranglehold on that part of the market, that it's really getting people thinking, hey, how do we look at this? And it's also bringing out the aspect that consumers are moving and have been and accelerating towards mobile, right? And so there are some other options versus a cookie, in the mobile space, the mobile ad ID. So it's some look to that, but then also there's some concerns about its longevity and, what happens there.
And that's really been the key question that I've been getting from advertisers that I sat down with. And it's kind of varied across the space, right? Whether I'm sitting down with a financial services partner, whether I'm sitting down with a digital publisher in one of our, key partnerships, the question that I've inherently gotten across the board is, okay, the cookies time has finally come. The maid's got to be next, right? And is the maid 2 years? Is the maid 5 years? Is the maid 10 years? Right. So there's a lot of questions kind of around that, and kind of a similar build in terms of the ecosystem or the structure of how that's developed. And I think one of the things that we at Axiom are doing a good job of, based on the conversation that I've had both internally and I think based on the feedback that we're getting from our partners, is trying to build in some of this fluidity, right? So depending on, we know that there are other ways that we can connect and reach in the interim that'll be probably maximize our strategy in terms of minimizing any impact that the cookie would have when it goes away in 2022. I think subsequently, the great thing that Axiom has, and we've touched on this a couple times, is that PII base, right? So that PII base isn't going away. So regardless of which digital or unknown or anonymous identifiers kind of come and go within the space, the key for partners such as us who have this strong core of PII is not going to be trying to stay in front of that. I mean, that's important, don't get me wrong. But I think more than that, it's going to be, how do we continue to kind of fluidly pivot to where we see the industry going, and kind of at the same time, to Kyle's point, continue to innovate to develop, new, better, stronger ways to engage that PII within the digital universe and to the omnichannel universe, really, right? So I think that over the next 3 years, we'll really see a continued focus on innovation, evolution in terms of, hey, we've got this great asset that we know isn't going away, right? This PII core isn't going anywhere. How do we best integrate this into the universe based on the changes that we've seen just over the previous 3 years? And knowing if we see that kind of disruption, right, in the next three, can we continue to better position ourselves within the industry to maximize our value to our advertisers, but not just our advertisers, our publishers, our platforms, everybody, our agencies across the board? How do we commingle all that together to give them the best experience possible?
Okay. And Kyle, we've touched on some of these already, but lots of vendors have jumped in quickly with solutions, even though we don't know all the details of Google's future plans yet. Any cautionary advice for an advertiser if she makes a go forward plan at this point?
It's the fact is there is no silver bullet out there. And a lot of, vendors are moving towards, different solutions that they feel like kind of best position them to help solve for that. The key is really looking at flexibility, and choosing partners that you feel have the flexibility, that aren't, one, so heavily invested in just cookies. And so, you know, they're going to have some difficulty pivoting, but also others that maybe are leveraging other technologies or concepts is really understanding what's the driver behind that. You know, there's some that are out there offering capabilities, and the whole premise is that there has to be mass adoption for it to really be effective, right? And saying, we're going to create this, you know, master consortium or even an industry level function. And you need to keep an eye on those because there's something that may take hold and you want to, you know, be able to take advantage of that. But there is a little bit of, you know, you need to be careful about being an early adopter if it's some kind of new function. I think, you know, as Patrick has been kind of talking about, man, PII based, understanding that and being with a partner like Axiom that has a lot of flexibility to leverage that solid foundation forward, whether it's, you know, again, on your own properties or in some other mechanism of getting it out into the broader ecosystem is critical.
And one of the things I hear Kyle saying, and I think it's really important to state directly, right, is we're comfortable at Axiom saying that we're going to figure out the answer together, right? There are lots of people out in the space who are saying, don't worry, guys, we got this. We know exactly what's going to happen. And that's bunk, right? I think we can all kind of admit that going forward. And I think one of the great things about being with Axiom is the partners we work with, we are a trusted partner, right? We have people coming asking for our point of view. And one of the reasons I think the conversations that we're having are resonating so well, and I think it's important whether you're an Axiom partner or not, is the transparency in being able to state, hey, some of this we don't know, right? And we're going to have to figure out as we get closer. And we're working, right? We're a close partner with Google. Like, we're having conversations with Google about what this looks like and continuing to understand what the environment's going to be to make sure that there's no interruption to some of our key partners, right? To go back to kind of the Facebook very, you know, slam of the door of third-party data that occurred a couple years ago, right? That was not only disruption for data partners such as Axiom within the space, but it was disruption for advertisers. And there was a point where Axiom, as a trusted advisor, was having advertisers without Axiom's knowledge going to Facebook and saying, look, if you're not going to play with Axiom in any kind of way or manner, then we're going to have to step back. And we're not as comfortable with you, whether it's you grading your own work, whether it's just us inherently trusting you. We've got our trusted partners, right? And so I think the reliance on those trusted partners within the ecosystem, of which I'm proud to believe that I work for one of them, I think we'll continue to see how this evolves over the next 18 months. And we'll continue to be transparent and fair about what we think the best strategy is moving forward.
Kyle, given that, how do you see opportunities for authentication becoming more important as we figure this answer out?
Well, I mean, it's the crux to it right now. It's moving into that PII kind of based world in the digital space. And to do that is the more you can get users to authenticate, the more you can capture some element. You're not going to necessarily always capture everything, but at least some signal that's an authenticated signal that comes with some degree of consent, because that's critical with the privacy driving a lot of change, right? Is understanding, hey, I want you consumer to, you know, relate with me. So just give me a crumb of something, right? Give me some type of PII and consent with that. And then being able to continue to collect that allows you to, not be dependent on cookies. It allows you to build your own asset out, because now you're starting to not just be focused on your own consumers that you have within your brand, but you're starting to look at those prospects and saying, okay, hey, now I'm collecting real information about you. The side benefit to that is, one, yes, you're able to recognize them, but now you can reach into that deep trove of both first party and third party data to be able to augment that into these profiles. So now you're making better informed decisions. You're not just out in an anonymous state on some other website and trying to just say, hey, I hope I reach somebody and I hope it's somebody that's actually relevant and actually wants to talk to me. You know, we've done pretty good about refining those types of audiences and leveraging those. But hey, if I can capture that in authenticated fashion, first party, tie them to a known identity, and then have all this information behind it that I can then leverage for decisioning and for, messaging, then you're just going to elevate that relationship with the consumer. And again, the beauty of that is, I mean, that is the real identity story of what we're able to accomplish. So,
all right. And as we wrap up today, I'll start off with you, Patrick. What are the first steps advertisers should take to begin to assess the impact to their companies?
Yeah, and I think we've touched on this a lot. Like, reach out to your trusted partners, reach out to your trusted advisors and understand their impact, right? And I think that there's a lot of research and advantageous strategy that you can build based on the feedback that you're getting from those partners, right? And I think more importantly, if things aren't adding up, don't be afraid to ask questions, right? I think we on the Axiom side, and I feel semi-comfortable speaking to this, having talked to partners directly about this, are comfortable with being challenged on our position on it, right? And I think that the transparency that we're providing makes it, doesn't make it difficult to challenge us. It just, we've kind of stated our position pretty flatly. And I think that that's a comfort. You know, there's not a lot of comfort in this world, as it's kind of a great unknown, but there's comfort in knowing that we are actively working with partners across the ecosystem to understand what this is going to mean. And our end goal always, right? Like, this sounds generic, but it is what it is. Our end goal is to make this as smooth a transition as possible for advertisers, agencies, publishers, platforms across the board, right? It does nobody any benefit to make a lot of noise as this goes, which is why we're working hard on this. And it's, you know, June of 2020 as we prepare for January 2022. So I think reach out, right? We are happy to have a conversation with you. We're happy to address your questions. We're very comfortable in telling you if you ask a question that's really good that we don't have an answer to. It helps us, right? If we haven't thought about that, we want to make sure that we're thinking about your needs, what you're concerned about, and what is driving your anxiety if you have any about this. The other thing that I'd state is if you haven't really given this a lot of thought, maybe it's a good time to start doing so, right? And it's a good time to get yourself in front of that as much as possible, to give yourself some runway and work with whatever partners you may have in the ecosystem, us preferably, but whoever it may be, to go out there and make sure that you've got some runway to figure out what exactly this is going to mean for you, your business, your initiatives, and your business plan as you build that over the next 18 months, knowing that this is going to come.
Kyle, anything you'd add to that?
Just that Patrick nailed it. I mean, those are great steps.
Got
right?
It.
I mean, that's right on. I think one thing to, you know, just tell clients is like, don't panic, right? Don't rush into something just because you think, oh, I've got to have an answer. We have a runway. I mean, that is one good thing about, you know, Google's strategy is that they gave the industry some time to think about it. And while it's complex and we're all having to work through it, you know, one thing is just take a breath, you know, really have those conversations. As Patrick was saying, you know, ask the questions. You know, for so long, there's just certain mechanisms. And this has been a complex ecosystem, right? There's so many players, there's so many different steps in order to get to that end result, that it was easy to just kind of be like, yeah, I'm not sure what's going on, but it apparently is working, you know, and, you know, we're going to do the best we can because there's no transparency. Right. Well, now part of this is forcing transparency because people are having to explain what they're doing, how they're doing it. So, you know, partner with people that are willing to have those conversations. You know, as Patrick said, we love to have those questions asked because one, we feel like we've got some good answers and we're super transparent about what we do and how we do it. But also, it makes us think deeper as well as a vendor, right? And a partner to be like, hey, are we answering this and are we, you know, bringing value to our clients? And so just don't panic, ask questions, and know that everybody is in the same boat. You know, we're all in this together. We're going to figure this out collectively and, you know, we're going to get answers because first of all, there's just too much money in all this, right? There's the ads is just too heavy for someone not to help figure it out. So, so it's all right. We're going to make through it.
Yes. Well, thanks so much to both of you for being here to give us all this good information today. And I feel sure based on our conversation that we'll be back in the not too distant future to talk about part two and what's happened then. But and then I'll be sure to also get our podcast about best moving practices since y'all both recently moved your entire household. You can, you know, give us a little insight into that as well.
Fantastic. Yeah. Thanks so much.
Really appreciate you having us. Thank you.
Yep. Bye-bye.